We do not have that much time, something like an hour or a little bit more. And as you can see, I have a huge pile of questions. Is there a pharmacist in the audience? Not a doctor, a pharmacist. Too bad. The pharmacists are well known to read all handwritings, and we probably could use one. So they read all these difficult prescriptions in this impossible doctor's handwriting. I will try to do my best, but I must say some questions are quite difficult to read. So if some are skipped, it might also be a reason, not some kind of reflective gesture, but just a matter of practicality. I try to group these questions in several groups just to be sure we can cover as large a ground as possible. And first, I want to take a batch of questions that follow the following line. Are art and reflection white and male? And another question, where are the women on this Sunday morning? I asked myself the same question, I must admit, as I was approaching this table. Obviously, I'll ask the question too late. Why are not here, and there is a list of prominent women names, are there not distinguished female representatives of other European countries, former Eastern European countries? Why are there no women at this side of the table? A question that cannot go unanswered. I posed it myself. The organizers tell me that they have done a considerable amount of effort to bring to this discussion several prominent artists and intellectuals of female genders, but that purely for practical matters that did not work out. So this is some kind of explanation, but of course it also indicates something of the condition of this world in the terms of gender relations and hierarchies. And I'm willing to take part of the blame on that for myself, very much aware of the problem, since the part of the world that I come from is well known for its male chauvinist features.
But you shouldn't be too defensive.
I'm not defensive, but I'm feminist enough to be sensitive, okay?
One problem is that the whole time now, remember a line by Esther Brown, what is the use of talking, but there is no end of talking. And I think one reason why women are not here is they are more intelligent than men. They know the question.
And from my experience, late experience, they are just more popular, it seems to me, to visit our conversations. They are used in another fields a lot.
Okay, then there is another batch of questions saying, what can the West expect from the East other than being solely imitated? And that is this hodgepodge of old style and new imitation that Boris was mentioning in describing the outlook of Moscow these days. The question following this line, you all come from different and interesting countries. How do you see the function of art in your political outlook from your specific country? And how do you think it will develop in the future? I think that's a good question to start. Would anyone venture into that? Yes, Peter?
Yes, I first want to come back to the former questions that you tell our female friends. To reassure you, you may not see it from me, but I have a soul of a very old woman.
You can see it.
You can see it.
You're so transparent, Peter.
Thank you. You helped me a lot. Then about the effect of the place of art in our society. There has been, I cannot prove anything, so you have
prove things and to have sociological reports and committees and things. Very hard work, and I esteem that a lot. But they have written a report, it's called More Than a Billion. And it proves that in Amsterdam, the economic importance of the arts in terms of jobs, provision of jobs, in terms of economic spin-off, is much bigger than the harbor, which is incredible in development. There are 12,500 jobs in the arts in Amsterdam. Incredible, I didn't know. Injected the arts, they do inject the politicians, the arts, or the community, with 313 million guilders a year, and they get back more than a billion in spin-off. It's much more profitable to inject money in the arts these days than in shipbuilding, for example. You had this LSV debacle when they put 3 billion guilders into building ships and nothing came out. In the arts, it's the opposite. And that cannot be really a surprise, because we are heading towards a so-called information society, in which information is the raw material of the working process. And of course, as I see it, but apparently many more people see it, there is no more interesting, valuable, many-sided information than the artistic information.
Yeah, thank you. Any other reactions to that, Boris?
Maybe I would like to react to the question about imitation and imitative character of the Eastern European or Russian art. I think that every art is imitation, and there is no originality in art. It is the ideology of being original. It's ideological illusion. No normal human being can spontaneously and originally begin to write a novel or to make an artwork. We are living in this system of imitation, all of us. And actually, I was confronted many times, precisely in the West, with some kind of some kind of expectation, for example, for the Russian art to be original, yeah. And actually, I find this expectation extremely oppressive, and it is amusing for me to find this kind of expectation here in the West, because it is also an expectation of the Russian government or the Soviet system. It's an idea and the principle of the censorship in the Soviet Union that the writer or the artist must be originally communistic or originally Russian. And it is some kind of expectation and some kind of oppression, which I was always uneasy living in this country. Now I come in the West, I suddenly realize, well, this kind of oppressive expectation is everywhere present. Now, this idea of being authentically, originally Russian or Hungarian, what I don't know what, is just ignoring the imitative international traditional character of the art activity as such. As an artist, as an intellectual, I am always foreign to my own country. I am always other than my own nations and my own language, because the language of my writings is always a specific, a different language, which takes a distance to the native speaker language of my own country. I only want to be different, I only want to be other. And I cannot be representative of a national culture. It is impossible for the intellectual, impossible for an artist. And it is an oppressive and negative expectation which must be just hinterfragt, I would say, in good German.
Any reactions to that?
Are you sure? Yeah, I'm not sure about it. When I walked to Amsterdam, remember a line by Hölderlin, can't say it in German first, schicksallos wie der schlafende Säugling, faithless like the sleeping baby. This is Amsterdam for me. And in Russia, or the Eastern countries, they still have fate, maybe terrible fate, but there's no fate here.
Fate in the sense of destiny, not fate of belief. Yeah.
And I think there's a difference. And I think behind this question, what can we wait from the East, is this maybe fear of Asia or the hope that Asia won't succeed or whatever. But I think there's a real difference. It's not only in imperialistic question.
Well, no, it's not imperialistic. Of course, it's a kind of expectation, it's kind of hope, and it's kind of frustration. But I'm glad to be frustrating here. I'm glad to say that it's nothing original. There's no light from the East. You know the saying, ex oriente lux, ex occidente luxus. And now, now the luxus is a lux, yeah? And actually, it can be frustrating, but it is liberating at the same time. You know, there is an expectation towards the artist that the artist must be spontaneous, but this expectation has something to do with contempt, with the idea the artist is not intelligent enough. I think artist is very, very intelligent and very reflective, and so are the Russians. they are not spontaneous, actually, as every other human being is not spontaneous. And there is no light in the East, but there was some faith, there was some schicksal, and now it is a good time to reflect on it and to be aware of it. But I think this expectation from the part of the Soviet, of the new Russian government, and from the West, of some Russian or Eastern originality, it is a false expectation. It will be always frustrated, always.
But it is more than that. I mean, it's so short-sighted. There is now an exhibition in the Mimikeri, which is an incredible exhibition. It exhibits the art treasures of Indonesia. And the central piece is the goddess, the so-called goddess of wisdom. And if you see her there in stone carved out, she is, by the way, from the 9th century, 3 centuries older than this whole city. And when you look at her, you have an urge to fall on your knees somehow. That is such an incredible harmony and femininity and refinement and culture in that image, and many more images around it, that you feel ashamed that you talk about things. What do we expect from the East? As if the East is our providing us. We have to learn a lot from the East, and I think if we continue our Western European egoistic macho ways, we don't destroy the world. We really need to listen to the Eastern voice very, very carefully.
Here is a question that goes beyond this dichotomy East and West, saying we talk all the time about West and East Europe today as before, and as if there nothing else exists than the Western capitalist society and the Eastern communist, or the former Eastern communist society. What we forgot all the time is the existence of the Middle European culture, Mitteleuropa, a long and old tradition which gave us an enormous amount of art and philosophy in the past, science, painting, literature, architecture, music. The Middle European culture has been very important during the beginning of this century. I think we have to realize that culture still exists. people are still alive who experienced that time, maybe we can expect something again from the Middle European art and culture. Does that culture still exist? I know you, George, have been writing about it and talking about it, and I just want to tie to that question another that is directly addressed to you, saying, Mr. Konrad, may I ask you to reflect on the second reflector, mirror, of the mind after the first one went into fragments? Do you visualize a beyond good or bad? So if I may ask you, George, to try to put these two questions together.
If I understood correctly the second one,
okay.
Maybe I will make a little poetry around the second one, because I probably didn't understand it in the right way. Yes, there are artists and people in the region of Europe which is named vaguely by Middle Europe or Central Europe, probably there is also a culture there. And as there are some valuable works, there is some probable similarity among them. And it would be hard to define it in a comparative study of cultures and literatures, but I feel some parallel tendencies and self-interpretations. But I don't like actually the question, what can give us Eastern or Central Europe, because you know every culture can give something. And the precondition is to go there or to learn it, somehow to pay attention to it. And then the best statement, what is possible to learn, will be really that what the person coming from another culture learned. And from the other side, all kind of self-advertisement rhetorics are somehow tasteless. So I will not do that. But I would say that in this part of Europe, it's really a platitude. There is a mixture of languages and of cultural influences. And therefore, there is also a different type of social development. Late on bourgeois man in comparison with the Western development, first with the English and the Netherlands, and then the French type, with more state influence, more centralism and absolutism, and more absolutism not only from the monarch, from the monarchy, but also from the side of the revolutionary and republican politics. And if we go further and further toward the east, then we will experience more state and less civil life, civil society, less civil initiatives, less middle class, from the state independent middle class. So there is a kind of globalism where the spheres of the power, the culture, the economics, the politics, the justice are somehow confounded, and although there is a tendency to liberate the state from ideologies and to have a more neutral power, more neutral media and so on, and to make some distinctions between the different powers, because it's quite bad if the powers are confounded. It's the condition of all kind of authoritarian rule. It's a very difficult process, because the centralization of the powers has always new rhetorics. So there are people who say, if they are upset enough, that instead of a left-wing statism, there is a kind of right-wing statism in Eastern or Central Europe, and the state still has a very strong role. I don't like these too generalistic remarks, because in Eastern and Central Europe there were some internal movements and processes and fermentation and erosion, and the rays of some independent tendencies which create a new situation which is much more complex there, and therefore we cannot define it with some journalistic simplifications. The fact that a type of statist, hierarchical, globalistic Eastern tendency is confronting with another type of individualistic, pluralistic, less statist, private tendency of the West creates quite interesting confrontations and mutual adaptations and ambiguities. And if we say that culture and art can use the ambiguities even in the outlook, in the metaphors of the everyday visual context and circumstances, then we feel that, for example, a so-called Comic-Con market or these bazaars in Eastern Europe, what we have, this popular black market or only parallel market, is something very special. You don't have it in Amsterdam in such form, and it can be shocking, and many life gestures and forms of life are different also from that what you have in Russia or what you have in Austria. And then we have also the different forms of the life. In a Budapest street, if you walk around and you go out from the downtown, yes, you will feel many, many changes, many new colors, many new shops. In Budapest it was characteristic that you had on the same corner the same bakery or butcher or nothing changed. The communism was a very stable Biedermeier in that respect, that you could expect that you will find the same espresso on the same corner, and maybe the chairs will be also the same. The time is going slowly. Now there are changes, and you can even be a little bit nervous from that you don't find that what you expected to find. And the advertisements, and these are naive and sometimes grotesque and funny or tasteless or vulgar. But me, for example, I like the special vulgarity of the East European design. And you find very strange, very funny, very, very crazy elements too, as you find them also if you walk around, for example, in Budapest, and you look on the facades of the houses. That type of style, what in Barcelona you find as a modernismo, Art Deco, Secession, or before that the eclecticism. It was the style of the end of the 19th century and turnaround of the century. It was always somehow crazy. Why did put this man, this architect, yet this tower there? It was so senseless and however so funny. So and from this deviation from a kind of norm came a kind of homogeneous style. This mixture is unavoidable, and in the mixture there are elements of imitation, and there are elements of the unavoidable originality, because I'm sure that if I walk in Moscow on the Pyatnitskaya and I look into the courtyards and look for this underclothes of the ladies, which are quite respectful, big. and if I see these old ladies sitting on the bank with the white babushkis, they are very original, and you don't find them in Amsterdam, and therefore why not to find it some value? And I find that the life in a village of Hungary is very homogeneous, and the families, as they expand and as they try to go upwards, that the young are already in the small town, and it was their life tendency to come from the village to the small town, which is maybe 10 kilometers far, and then to visit the parents every afternoon, and to have, however, the small wine yard. This management of the life, having also urban industrial activities, and having also some agriculture, and killing the pork, and somehow managing the possibilities of the lives to be skillful, the skillful people. It's also to people who are able to survive. For small people, it was the task, how to survive, how to avoid the greatest dangers. So I believe in this mastership of survival, there is some kind of originality. And there is also some kind of originality sometimes in the wild forms of political emotionalism, which is going in some case, for example, in the country from where you are coming, to the war, and also the passionate atmosphere of the internal policy in Hungary too, and probably in all the Central European countries, that people are really depressed from that what a politician says on the screen, although yes, it's possible to survive these sometimes extremely stupid sayings. And also the fact that people are more related to the state, to the government, and therefore there is a kind of special anxiety, which is a global anxiety, which is related to the erosion of every institutional forms, is also a specialty of this region. But from the other side also, although anxieties are there, if young people achieve something in the business, and if they are successful business people, they aren't bourgeois as a normal Dutch bourgeois. Maybe they will spend for stupidities huge monies, and they will, as they got it, they will throw it out. It's also a kind of specialty. And also a kind of, there is a special hedonism in this new class. From the other side, what is special? The uncertainty of the fundamental social values, of the solidarity with the poor, the brutality of egoism. From the other side, a very questionable nationalistic collectivism, the struggle of religions to reconquer some souls, the ideas of the individual freedom and new individualisms. New religions are coming. Many in my country, there are really many reviews. Young people decide that I will now make a review, and he can, somehow he can, if he's not very clumsy. Therefore, there are hundreds of that, and people can read that, and in this big invasion of words, who knows what remains. You can find new Marxists, and you can find new fascists, and you can find all type of liberals, conservative liberals, populist liberals, national liberals, social liberals. You can find social democrats, you can find all the families. Nothing died out. Everything which was oppressed and was put in the refrigerator came out, and very clear ideas, absolutely crazy and wild ideas. So it's more colorful than it was.
Thank you. There is, of course, a batch of questions that deal with the nature of this debate itself, and some of them are quite critically intoned. I don't want to skip those questions. For instance, is this discussion a reflection or art? And there has been said a lot, but what does a forum like this show? What can make the public curious to art when the artist has a private, non-public attitude? Is this forum the new theater, in quotation marks? Do you agree that politics is a play with abstractions and that art is a play with images and forms? If you do, why are you artists playing with even bigger abstractions in these discussions than the boldest politician would allow himself to? It's a good question. And a question that goes directly, it's coupled with this one. If politics is such a mediocre thing, why do artists speak so much about it? Or in their heart, do they still want to make the society more responsive to their art, to make it nicer? Now that has a touch that I think we should stop and reflect now. Do the artists want to make the society more responsive to their art, to make it nicer? What about that?
It's not the same thing, I think, to be nicer or to be responsive to the art.
To be nicer to
But if you're nicer, nice, it helps, maybe.
Nicer
but,
to whom?
Nicer to your public.
Are we speaking about money at last, yes?
Yeah.
It seems to me it's like that.
Yes, okay, go ahead.
Yes. I think that really we are mixing a lot of things because we started to feel ourselves too reflexible to all political situations, to all, we received too much experience, and we became... We have to become shy in one position and to lose our shyness in another. For instance, what we can teach about what we've learned about our experience of surviving as an artist in different worlds, because it's all surviving in the West and in the East. And now we are just exchanging all the time the experience from opposite position, but it looks like the same. If you are forbidden because of censorship or because of lack of paper, it's the same result. And if we are speaking about money at last, that may be the only experience we have to bring bravely to the world is a change of mind in spending money. We are not commercials, we are not dealers, we are not practical, but we can show the way how to spend money better. Especially with our Russian experience, yes? Just divas, and it will be something. Because all this practical spending of money we are involved in, had broken our necks, and we are looking, we are turned, and we are all looking at the past in order to tell about the end of the future, yes? And this practice is nothing. If you receive one turn in your mind, that it's nothing, that the real end will be death of everybody, personal, then there are some art, and not only in art, but perhaps all our progress, all our this great, we're too much depressed, especially in Russia, in socialist camp, we are too much depressed by great and huge development of mankind in the West and all these goods and all this. Well, but really I can't remember any shop I used to buy my jeans for a lot of my relatives during 5 years. It was a hard task. I can't remember any, but not long ago I visited this Flemart, this hall in Amsterdam, and I remembered every woman and every table, and every moment that I bought one thing for one gilding, and I remember this piece, and I remember. Therefore, there are different ways to understand the world. For instance, not long ago I read one. You see, there are some something new for the West. For instance, one old Ukrainian philosopher. There were like something like that. His name was Kavrada. Maybe it's funny to translate in Dutch. But he really divided all humanity in three sorts. One is peasant, another is priest, and the third is warrior. Oh, I don't know, remember the order. What to do with all these warriors when we are in the end of the 20th century, when we are losing all kind of imperialistic thinking, but we are still in the same genetic combinations about warriors. Maybe all these warriors and soldiers are looking very strange. Yes, they are a little bit ridiculous. They are medieval already in their uniforms, and they are much better to work in the doors of restaurants than in real life. And therefore, we are losing something, and I'm happy about this. But where all this active part of mankind will use their energy, will use their genius? I have to explain that all these armaments, all this artificial difference between different social systems was just the way for power and nothing more. And if it's lost, the power is already lost. And there will be another way for power to have their power in our life. And maybe this great activity, this great energy, this great aggressiveness, which belongs to the big and most important part of human genetics, to the warriors, can be brought to another hole of losing money. And another hole of losing money is certainly ecology and certainly art. Why not to understand it's like a real experience we have to bring to the world, and not to be so shy as understanding and explaining to everybody that we are good enough to give us something. Well, we are the way. We are the way of survival and nothing to do.
Thank you.
Artists, yes, just losing of your
Christians,
losing of your aggressiveness is our way, yes. And what is spending money for art? For instance, to invent the bomb, to invent the this airplane or rocket. It's great usage of human genius. And certainly active genius was working for it, and you can't develop him into making glasses or drinks or something good. But if to imagine what kind of work we'll receive to organize the production without pollution, it will be the same whole. It's much more difficult, and you'll be equal to the God in his creation to examine and to develop these locks for destroyed natures, because he used his genius for inventing such things like heart, bloody movement, water, etc., in order to build all this. And now we have to do the same, and it's close to artwork. That's why it seems to me this aggression can be artificial.
And I want to be more serious, to listen more serious to the criticism I hear from these last questions. Why do you artists talk so much about all of this? And I think that is one of the main criticism you can have for artists, in the sense that there is only one first commandment for an artist: thou shalt not be a bore. Very important. I think why do we talk about the politics so much? Part of the reason is because it is the thing we have in common in general. It's the only thing. In the early days, all
read one book, the one book people. You still have them in Iran, etc. You have these one book people. We read all different books. They have one song, the national anthem and the related songs. And we have one church, so we Deo Gloria, and one God. We don't have all these things. So we tend to talk about the things we have in common, which is not the symphonies, not the books, not, because we listen to different things. So that is maybe an excuse. But to take that serious, maybe what is expected of us is more theater. That we try to say things we never said before.
You're pretty good at that.
Well, thank you. I think it is, for me, also the most interesting thing to say things that I never saw before.
Yeah, but in all seriousness, there is a batch of questions that really tries to get the relationship of the artist and the public, and we should ponder that, I think. What is the relationship of the extreme focus on money in today's art world makes art part of the productive system rather than of the intuitive system? For example, trading the art becomes more important than art itself. Is therefore art about to disappear, or where is the difference of a reflection becoming art or commerce? Better, who decides this and who will in the future? Or, I can't read the whole question, just the second part. Is the piece of work really getting worse when you not only look at yourself but also at your public? Is the public so bad? And is the money not also a big stimulator of creativity? Or another one which is a replica to this diagnosis of pluralism that you are, Peter, making. The intellectuals, as to say it in the words of Conrad, owners of legitimation, have been operating on the basis of universal values of the Enlightenment, Aufklärung, liberty, freedom, civil rights, and so on. Are intellectuals nowadays still transferring these universal values mentioned above? Are the values of intellectuals and artists still universal or rather particularistic? I'd like you, Hannes, to reflect on that. You want this piece of paper in front of you?
Yes, give it, yes? Please. Well, this is a very difficult question.
Of course.